With MS Auto Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and we're joined now by Mike Grenier, a sports journalist and sports writer and our basketball insider here. And Mike, on this Wednesday after the Celtics played on Tuesday night, welcome back. And I don't even know where to start.
Well, I think I just mentioned to you before we started this conversation that, like, you shouldn't know where to start because we didn't expect to be having this conversation on a Wednesday afternoon after the Celtics went down to Miami last night and thinking they were done for the season, you know, because the previous night the Lakers were in the same position and they couldn't come through either. So they became the 150th consecutive team to not come back from a 3-0 deficit. And so obviously history would say that, you know, it would dictate that maybe the Celtics would have no chance last night. But you got to give them a lot of credit. I mean, they played great defense last night, the Celtics did, and they took over the third quarter, outscoring the Heat 38-23, and they sustained it through the fourth quarter and came away with a 17-point win. So what does it mean? It means they get another opportunity Thursday night at the Boston Garden. They'll be at home. There are no guarantees because, obviously, both Philly and Miami have shown in the playoffs that they can beat the Celtics at the Garden. But at least they're going to be at home, and they have the confidence that comes with winning any playoff game.
There's so much to unpack here, Mike. I got to go back. I got to tell you, I have to mention this editorially. I think I mentioned this on Monday night. I was watching one of the local news channels, and the sports writer, the sports director, was talking to, I don't know who it was, one of the Celtics or the coach or whatever, and he was evoking the 04 Red Sox and saying,
"Oh my God!"
And saying, "Have you talked to any of those players?" And I'm thinking, what on earth? You know, do you understand this is the NBA? And so,
you know, it's so funny. It's been, that theme has been pounded. I'm glad you brought up that subject because that theme of the 2004 Red Sox has been pounded into the fans for the last 3 or 4 days. Dan Shaughnessy of the Globe wrote a column about it. Reached out to Kevin Millar. He did actually reach out to Kevin Millar and talk about it. But I think it's a preposterous comparison because you cannot compare a baseball team to a basketball team. You know, it's just apples and oranges. You know, in baseball, if you have a dominant pitcher and you're down 3 games, if you have Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling,
yeah,
somebody else going 3 straight games, you could easily win those games because pitchers dominate the competition. In basketball, it's 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a pitcher dictating the 9 innings.
It's
a preposterous, it's an absolutely insane comparison.
And I only heard one person do that. Shaughnessy's column was okay because he reached out to Millar, not the Celtics, but talking to Millar. And that was a great recollection. We all love that. We revel in that, especially since it was against the Yankees. But my thing is that, look, if it were to happen, that's when you invoke the 04 Red Sox, you know.
Right.
Not now. For heaven's sakes, let's concentrate on, I read a couple of stories today on, look, we have to win this quarter, we have to win this half, we have to win this game. And that's where it starts. Now let's dissect the game a little bit.
If
you don't mind here. I look at the score sheet and I still see, you know, nothing from Sam Hauser, nothing from Peyton Pritchard. They just they played 1 minute each. But on the other hand, you know, Grant Williams was a major contributor.
Yes, he was.
With 14 points and 6 boards, and Malcolm Brogdon, not so much.
Right, and actually Malcolm Brogdon's, I'd call it a 2-game slump with him. With him, I have all the confidence in the world that he could possibly score anywhere from 10 to 20 points in game 5. You know, he's too professional, he's too good, he's had a great season, he's had a great shooting season. I just think he's had a couple of bad games. I don't think Miami has done anything defensively to try to, like, put the clamps on him because obviously they're still concentrating on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So I do expect Malcolm Brogdon to bounce back. If Grant Williams can give the Celtics that kind of contribution that he just gave him in game 4, in game 5, I mean, that would be a huge pick-me-up, you know. So I can see Brogdon bouncing back. And if Grant Williams, I said, can have that similar a game, then they're they might be in business again in game 5.
What's curious about Brogdon's minutes is they only got 17, whereas Grant got Williams got 29. And so in 17, still, Brogdon was the third leading rebounder on the team, and he got a few assists. So, you know, he's valuable no matter what. Now, tell me the keys to yesterday's Tuesday's game. What were the keys as you saw it?
I think there were. I thought the first quarter, for example, instead of having, and we've talked about this endlessly about Jason Tatum, you know, taking the inbounds pass and walking the ball in, into half court, then the Celtics settling into their offense with 11 seconds left on the 24. I thought they made a conscious effort to push the ball, to push the pace in the first quarter. They established a tempo that Miami might have been a little surprised at. So that was a good start right there, that first quarter. Now, they didn't hit all their shots, so therefore at halftime they were behind 56-50. But I thought the tempo, setting that tempo, and Miami had to react to it, I thought that was an important change in the series, okay? Mm-hmm. That kind of set the tone for the third quarter when Tatum got hot. He scored 14 points in the third quarter, and the Celtics outscored the Heat 38-23. So, to me, up-tempoing the game was a huge factor. And obviously, the other factor, Rick, and I think you figured this out already, is they played so much harder on defense mm-hmm. throughout the game. You know, I saw Derek White make a couple of blocks. I saw Grant Williams, who, of course, got into Butler's face stupidly back at the Garden. He blocked one of Jimmy Butler's shots in the third quarter. It was during the course of the game, I think it was like a 5 or 6 point game at the time, was an important play because the Celtics went down and scored off of that block shot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just thought the defensive commitment was far greater than it had been in the previous three games. So, again, that's another factor, because a lot of times when you're playing good defense, it leads to a deflection, it leads to a steal, and then the Celtics all of a sudden have an advantage going back on the other end on offense. So, to me, those two things, pushing the pace and playing mm-hmm. a much sounder defense, were two very important things.
Okay. I think a couple of things I noticed, and I got to tell you, Mike, I was not as invested as I usually am, because I'm very superstitious, and I remember during the Patriots 28-3 debacle in the Super Bowl when they were down to Arizona, I kept flipping the channel. I didn't leave completely, but I kept flipping the channel and going back until they caught my attention. So I'm superstitious. Sort of did the same thing with the Celtics, so I wasn't in there in all 60 minutes. But I noticed early on, Tatum initially tried to do the one-on-four thing again, and the ball got stripped.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how much they were down at that point, but I really got discouraged. But then I started watching him beyond that, and he didn't do that again, as far as I can remember. He didn't do that again.
Right.
That's item number one, that he started to see the whole court again, finally. And then the other thing was, by God, Mazzulla called a timeout at the right time.
Yes, that's great. He called timeouts after Miami would have a 6-0 run or a 7-0 run. And at one point, I think the Celtics actually had on a 4-0 run, like a little 4-0 run, and he must have seen something he didn't like because he called a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to your point about Tatum, I felt exactly the same way, because you're right, he was going 1-on-3, 1-on-4. Then I distinctly recall a play when he finally got his head together and said, okay, maybe let's play a team game. He was on the baseline, he was quickly double-teamed, and Marcus Smart slipped from the foul line to underneath the basket,
mm-hmm.
and he immediately hit him with a pass, and Marcus Smart had an uncontested layup. You can make the game so much easier when you have that court vision, as you just mentioned. And he had that court vision last night on Tuesday night, Tatum did. And it led to some easy baskets because he was getting rid of the ball and not trying to force shots from the baseline with two men on him. So the other factor, too, I think, Rick, was Al Horford, who's had some really bad shooting games. I believe he had a practice after those games at the Boston Garden when they lost two, and he was shooting very poorly. He took an extended practice of taking three-point shots, and the three-point shots started to come back to him last night a bit,
mm-hmm.
you know. So so you combine all those things, and it added up to a win. And then also, too, by playing the better defense, Miami's shooting percentages went down. Caleb Martin, who has been playing great for Miami, had – he had 25 points at the Garden in one of the games, and he had 16 points at the half last night, and he was 6-for-6. But they must have did something, because Caleb Martin finished with 19.
He
only got three in the second half.
And it's so weird, Mike. A couple of things. When the Celtics played like they played last night, I don't even know how to describe. You could see the difference in talent. The fact right. that if they play together as a team, they are more talented than Miami.
Right.
And you could see, especially in the second half, Miami sort of fading back a little bit. Now, that's not to say, you know, that the Heat's not going to win the next game. But you know what I'm saying? If everything else is equal, the Celtics, they should win a game against Miami whenever they play them. The other thing I want to ask you about is the combined play of the team enhances Robert Williams' games, doesn't it? Because
well, there's no question.
If the team is playing good around him, he takes him to the next level, whether he wants to or not.
Right, I totally agree with that, because defensively, teams don't bother to guard him if he's not near the basket.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he can be a facilitator. He's a good passer. And then, of course, if teams aren't bothering with him on defense, then, I mean, there were a couple times last night when he came down as a trailer on the fast break, and he ended up with dunks, which is what he does the best,
mm-hmm.
because he does have athletic talent. He can move up and down. He can move the 94 feet as quickly as anybody in the league, pretty much. You know, he's really quick, really quick. And last night they hit him with a couple of passes at opportune times. And isn't the game so much easier when you're finishing from 2 feet away as when you're trying to finish from 21 feet away? And I think sometimes when the Celtics run, they end up with that kind of opportunity for Robert Williams, because he's not going to make a baseline jumper. He's not going to make a foul line jumper. But if he's running the floor and he's got a size advantage, there was one, I believe Kevin Lowry was on him or something. Lowry's like 37 years old. And he's like 6'3" or something. He was in the paint against Williams, and I forget who found him. It might have been Jaylen Brown or Tatum. And it turned around, and he had himself a dunk. And that's the type of play you want to create for a Robert Williams, you know. And they had that in mind last night throughout the game. So yeah, I guess it was a different, totally different mental approach, because mm-hmm. they had their backs to the wall.
Okay, what about the other guys we haven't mentioned now? Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown.
Well, to me, Marcus Smart was still shaky. I think it was 3-for-9, I believe, on threes. So that's still not a good percentage. But he had a couple of them during the body of the game, during the course of the game when it was a close game, that gave them, would push the lead from 5-8 or from 4-7. So within the context of the game, those were important shots. And I can't remember any crazy turnovers that he had, all right? Now, Jaylen Brown was both good and bad. We saw the bad early in the game. I thought one time he got fouled, Rick. You might remember this one. And he went to the foul line, and he was worse than Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, the first one clanged off the front of the rim.
Yep.
And the second one barely grazed the rim. And yeah, I remember saying to my wife, this is the same old Jaylen Brown. He can't hit free throws in a big game. But he did settle down. I thought he had a much better second half. He took it to the basket. He didn't take that many threes. He was more concentrating on taking it to the basket. When he gets an angle for a drive, because he's so exceptionally talented and athletic, he can finish off on those drives because he's very acrobatic on finishing at the basket. I'd much rather have him make those plays with an opportunity to get fouled than, you know, taking a three-pointer that doesn't have a good percentage on, you know, especially in this series. His percentage is way down, so you shouldn't be taking too many threes. And it's also now, at most, you have three games left, so therefore you want to do what you're doing correctly right now instead of reverting to a three-point shooter.
Is it a case at this point, Mike, as Tatum goes, so goes the Celtics? So go the Celtics?
Yeah, in many ways. He's still the engine that drives the machine. And what did he have, like 34 last night, I believe?
33, it says here on the sheet.
And he had 14 in that third quarter, which mm-hmm. was the critical quarter. And he had to do that because, you know why? Jimmy Butler, who only had 9 at halftime, had 13 in the third quarter. So Tatum had to be his equal or even better for the Celtics to take a lead. And, of course, the Celtics get contributions from other players because Butler scored 20 in the second half to finish with 29. And it's like the other Heat players, like you mentioned, who didn't, like Duncan Robinson, who had 15 in one game at the Garden, had like 6 points, and Lowry was like 1-for-5, whereas at the Garden he had 13 in one half. So the guys who were non-stars for the Miami Heat didn't have a good game. I think Adebayo wasn't nearly the player that he was in the first couple of games at the Garden and in Game 3. So Kevin Love, he didn't do much. So while Jimmy Butler did extremely well, his compatriots did not do much in that game.
What did you notice? You mentioned defense, the tenacity of the defense.
Yes.
Was there a difference in the game plan, Mike, that you might have seen? Did they do anything different, or they just played better man-on-man and whatever they were doing?
Well, to me, I don't know in terms of subtle differences that Mazzulla and the coaching staff might have talked to them about, but what I look for is just hustle and being in a good position and playing with great intensity. I mean, to me, if you talk to whether it be Larry Bird or Kevin McHale or Dave Cowens or any of the groups of the past, they would say to you that it's all, and Dennis Johnson, I should mention him because he was a great, it's all about effort. It's also about being in position. It's all about effort and being tenacious and denying the opposing player his favorite shooting spots and also blocking out on the board so that guys don't sneak in for offensive rebounds. Eric Spoelstra has mentioned in this series that defense is extremely hard work, and not everybody wants to play defense.
It seems to me that the greatest asset the Celtics had last year on defense, and when they play a great game this year, and I'm just going with my layman's eyes here, it's their ability to switch.
Yep.
Their ability to change defenders immediately. In other words, there's five guys on the Celtics defending the five other guys, not necessarily one-on-one.
Yep, right. And switching is a huge part of defense in the NBA these days because everyone runs a pick and roll and all that stuff, and you create a mismatch for the big man going inside, or with your best player, like a Jimmy Butler, for example, having a big man on him, he can go by him at any point. So defense is actually more important now than it's ever been because these coaches have all the angles covered. So I just thought the Celtics played exemplary defense last night. They made that commitment to not just playing good positional defense, but just making that extra effort. Derek White, in particular, impresses me, Rick, in terms of, I think he made the second team all-defense, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Yep.
And he, to me, seems to have a knack for using his offhand, his left hand, to block a shot.
From behind.
Yeah, from behind. He seems to have impeccable timing. And we've seen it, I think, throughout the season. And it's also been really very evident in the playoffs. And it doesn't matter whether he's guarding Jimmy Butler or Caleb Martin or anyone. He's done a great job. And, of course, Marcus Smart always going to give you that effort. And to me, Al Horford, even for an older guy, is still a very efficient defender. Mm-hmm. He does the best he can against Adebayo. And, you know, of course, we know that Robert Williams is a good shot blocker. So you take all those things in combination, and sure, you can come up with a great defensive effort, which they did last night. And, Rick, you know what? I want to go back to history because I looked this up before you called, and we look at the Celtics' position right now being down 3-1, and we say, they don't have much of a chance. But with all the talk about a team's being down 3-0, I did find three teams that were down 3-0 in the playoffs and came back to tie at 3-3, which gives you some hope. And I'll tell you what those teams were, okay, because just it's a little factoid that I think is kind of important to give people hope. In 1951, the Rochester Royals led the Knicks 3-0. The Knicks won the next three games and lost in Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
In more recent history, the 1994 Utah Jazz came back, and they tied the game at 3-3, and they came back before they lost the seventh game. And then there was one other team, I want to say it might have been the Nuggets in 99, okay? So that's three teams right there that came back, at least from 3-0 to tie.
Okay, but that's cool. I love it. Great stuff. But here's my thing statistically as a math teacher.
Yeah.
That the 3-0 stuff means nothing now. They're 3-1. They're
right.
Down 1-3. And I want to look at statistically, forget about being down 0-3. I don't care about that. What teams who have been down 1-3 have come back?
Well, 13 teams have come back from 3-1 to win it.
That's all I care about.
All right, 13. That's significantly better than being 150-0. You know, in other words, right?
Yeah.
And they're in the NBA Finals, which would be the next round for the Celtics if they win this somehow. The 2015-16 Cleveland Cavaliers were down 3-1 in the finals and came back and won the championship.
Wow. Okay.
So that's something that pin your hopes on. Yeah. If somehow they end up playing the 10th.
That's all. But at this point, that's all that matters.
There have been 13 teams that have been down 3-1. So if you took this at the point of origin right now, 3-1. Let's say the Celtics had won the first game and they lost the next.
There you go.
You could hang your hat and say, well, 13 teams have come down for 3-1 and have won a series. So from that standpoint, it's a lot better than being down 3-0. Okay.
Well, my dad used to say law of averages. We'll take that and then we'll take the 150-0 and say it's about time somebody pulled it off.
Well, you're right, because you know history is made to be broken and they whack good stuff, right? But to me, the Celtics coming home tomorrow, they can't be comfortable at home, Rick, because they're 4-5 at home in the playoffs. That means counting the Atlanta series, the Philly series, and this series against Miami. Two losses at home already to Miami. So what they have to do is take the intensity that they had bottled up on the road, where it's so much tougher to win, and unlock that, pop the cork off that bottle at the Boston Garden, where the fans are going to be going wild for you tomorrow night, Thursday night. And you want to take feed off that crowd's energy, and while still playing a sound, constructive game on both ends of the court. If you do that, then like you said, win the first quarter, win the half, win the second half, and then if you got two wins, it's a different story going to Miami. Miami will feel the pressure of having to win at home in game six. But let's not worry about that yet. That's looking ahead. What you want to worry about is winning at the Garden before the home crowd to make it 3-2.
And for one game only, it seems like that the team has, if they didn't have the confidence, they have regained confidence in Missoula, or that could have maybe have been a media fabrication. But it was good to see what happened last night for the kid. And I call Missoula his kid because he's brand new.
Right, 34 years old, and like I said, looking up that stuff about the history of the NBA's playoffs, there have been 13 teams that have come back from 3-1. It's just that when you're down 3-0, you're 0-150. But, you know, like I said, if you're down 3-1 and you look at it from that standpoint, 13 teams, that's a heck of a lot more than one or two teams that have come back from 3-1 to win the series. Wow. So the Celtics have to think of it as, okay, down 3-1, let's win this game at home. Forget about being down 3, but now let's make it 3-2. And let's make it all. If you're a Celtics guy, a coaching staff member, you say to the team, if we win this one, we're 1-0. We're 1-0. 1-0.
That's it.
1-0. Think of it that way, because now we go to Miami in the next game, we have a chance to make it 2-0. Right? That's a positive approach to the being down 3-1. You know, you want to go up 1-0 strictly tomorrow night. You want to go 1-0.
And you know, it's funny. It just had a light go off of my head, the light bulb here.
Yeah.
With these Celtics, it's mental stuff. It's not physical. It's mental.
Yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of it's mental, Rick. When you get to these tough series, that's why I loved the Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish teams in the 80s, and, of course, the Dave Cowens, Havlicek, JoJo White teams in the 70s, because they had that mental toughness. Now, Rick, regarding the 3-0 being behind, I think a couple of people have brought up Celtics 40 years ago, 1983 team, and I covered that team. They were down 3-0. They were down 2-0. They went out to Milwaukee. Now, I was the guy that was assigned to cover the 2 games in Milwaukee. And they lost those 2 games when Bill Fitch was coaching. And that team had Larry Bird. It had McHale. It had a lot of the great players that went on to win it the following year. The problem was that in 83, and I so remember it as if it happened last night. I'm sitting underneath the basket at the press table, very close to the bench.
Yep.
And they were so united in their hate of Bill Fitch that they couldn't play for him anymore.
Oh, boy.
And Larry Bird was the only one who was a staunch defender of Bill Fitch because, see, Larry Bird could take any kind of criticism from any coach, and he would let it roll off his back because he had ultra confidence and he was a team-oriented guy. Mm-hmm. But some guys who were sensitive, McHale being one, I could remember McHale walking out of the timeouts during Game 4 in Milwaukee, and ML Carr had to grab him by the shoulders and get back in that, get back in the timeout. But they lost Game 4. They lost 4 straight. And sure enough, 4 weeks later, Bill Fitch was fired, and they brought in Casey Jones. And essentially, they brought back the same players the following year. What happened in 1984? They defeated the Lakers at the Boston Garden and won a title 1 year later. So, you know, you're hoping that even if the Celtics lose here, that they have some sort of mental toughness to come back next year because they'll still have a really, really good team. But I just remember that 83 team losing 4 straight, because it was a different kind of story, though, because they just at that point had had it with Bill Fitch. He had won out his welcome because Bill Fitch was very different than Mazzulla. Bill Fitch was an experienced coach who could be really acerbic and volatile and also very critical of his players. And they had won the title with Bill Fitch in 1981, but two or three years later, so much negativity. Bill Fitch kind of coached with a negative stick. You know what I mean by that?
Yep.
He used to pour on the venom to get his motivated players. Different coaches approach it different ways. And the players just got fed up with it. And it reached the point of no return for Bill Fitch.
Okay. An assignment for you, Mike, is next time we talk, hopefully it'll be under good circumstances again.
Right.
I want to dig into the Casey Jones factor as coach because
sure.
To contrast him with Bill Fitch, I think would make a fascinating discussion.
Right.
So would you please make note of that? I want to talk about Casey.
And maybe the other half of that will be maybe we're coming off another Celtics win.
That's what I'm hoping.
Or two more or something like that. But we can't look at two more right now. We have to look at one game, one quarter at a time, one half at a time, and see what happens. But if they play with the same kind of approach and intensity that they approach game three with, they have a shot. That's all you can say.
All right. It's been fun, Mike. Thanks for taking the time again.
All right.
And hopefully we'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Sounds good, Rick.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye. That is Mike Grenier, who is our basketball insider. He's a sports journalist. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.